Said, if you can't take these twists and turns, man, I don't blame you. And I said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. I've crossed the valleys fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Millview, Rockview, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Root, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillysburg, Orbisonia, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellesburg, Robsonia, Mountaintop, Glen Rock, Flat Rock, Sunbury, St. Mary, Shick, Shanny, Big Shanny, I'm a Danny.
Just keeps it that amateur feel.
Or Bloomsburg Library, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, this was,
yeah, well, we often have to scout mobile locations. Is Charlie Dent, what's he doing now then?
So he's on CNN, and he's at, a law lobbying firm in Philly that is also in D.C. I forget the name of it. I say Kano Gates, but it's not Kano Gates.
No, it's fine. So are we recording?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
We are.
Here we are. Welcome to Barnstorming. That was part of the chit-chat.
Okay.
We're here with Keith Pemrick. I keep trying to put a B in and make it Pembrick. Pemrick.
Yes. Denny Wolf's campaign manager, and Denny Wolf is running in the 9th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania. It encompasses Columbia.
Would we say it's part of the red tea?
I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't either.
Binary, but it kind of overlaps. Bourbon County, Columbia County, Lebanon County, Montour County, Schuylkill County, and then parts of Berks, Luzerne, and Northumberland County.
Okay, yeah, but for people who haven't memorized the county map, like, do parts of the district, is the like northeast part overlap a little bit with the Wilkes-Barre, Scranton area, kind of greater metropolitan area, or not so much?
Not so much. So
the part Luzerne,
we have is geographically it's the western part, although most of the population's in the eastern part of which is the 10th district now.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, we don't have Hazleton, but then when you get west of Hazleton, across the river, that's what we have in Luzerne.
You don't have Hazleton, so that might be a good reference point for people because that is Lou Barletta's stomping grounds.
Yes.
This used to be his district. Now he's running for Senate.
It's a hodgepodge though because it's Barletta, Marino,
right.
Charlie Dent, Ryan Costello, Matt Cartwright.
Right.
So it's just...
Yep.
Everybody's got a new person.
Yes.
That's interesting. So of the redistricted districts, this is probably one of the most... The one that has maybe the most pieces from other ones. I mean, I haven't studied it, but...
I don't know, but it has a lot of pieces from other districts.
That's interesting.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, we kind of jumped ahead. Should we hear more about Keith first?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been involved in politics for, I guess... Nearly 20 years now?
Yeah, a little over 18 years.
Yeah, and
but my first internship was actually the fall of 98, so 20 years.
20 years, wow. Yeah. And was that with Tim Holden?
That was with Paul McHale, who was the former congressman from the Lehigh Valley.
Did he have a Navy?
Yes.
That old show?
McHale's Navy, yeah, but he was a Marine.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Which technically Navy, right?
That was a joke for the baby boomers.
Yeah. McHale served from 93 to 98.
From Lehigh Valley?
From Lehigh Valley. Didn't run for re-election. Pat Toomey then won that seat.
Oh, interesting.
And then Charlie Dent replaced Toomey when Toomey ran for Senate and lost to Specter in 2004 in the primary. I'm sorry, that's Arlen Specter for the kids as well.
Yeah.
You know, recently we had a library book sale and I got a copy of the, what is that report? The JFK assassination report.
Oh,
the Warren Report.
The Warren Report.
Yeah, and I was flipping through it. Arlen Specter was one of the
really?
Authors. Yeah.
That's my gosh.
Well, the Oliver Stone, Arlen Specter was the magic bullet theory.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. This is gold for our podcast. This is the kind of interesting nuggets.
Yeah, Arlen Specter.
Like, this is totally random, but John Showers is the county commissioner in Union County, and he was in, I don't know if you would know him, he was in the state house in the, 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And then he ran for state senate and lost. But his campaign manager was...
the Raging Cajun.
Yeah.
James Carville?
Yeah, yeah, it was like one of his early gigs. And according to John, James Carville is the one who said that Pennsylvania is, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia with Kentucky in between, or pick your state, Alabama. I'm from Tennessee. I'm glad no one ever says Tennessee.
Yeah, I hear Kentucky or Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Real quick side note on Paul McHale. He was the first Democrat to ask Bill Clinton to resign. Lewinsky. And I started interning about a week after that.
Yeah.
And he went from no name congressman, not running for re-election, to on Meet the Press when Tim Russert was still doing Meet the Press.
Wow.
And
so your job was just...
I was supposed to be there twice a week, and I wound up interning 4 days a week. And that actually really kind of catapulted me. Yeah. I interned for Tim Holden the next semester.
Mm-hmm. And were you majoring in government or politics?
I majored in political science.
Political science
at American.
At American University. Yeah.
Yep. I feel like a lot of people go to American probably are interested in that because of its location.
A lot of... So there are five schools, or at least there were five schools when I was there. I should know this as an adjunct professor there. There might be six now. There might be a health school, public health school. But School of Public Affairs, which is mm-hmm. politics, law, mm-hmm. is very popular, as is the School of International Service.
Right, right.
Which is highly ranked.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
And so would you say,
and,
though...
And,
oh, go ahead.
And you worked for Tim Holden then for 12 years or so?
Yeah, so I interned for Tim in Tim's office from January to May of 99. And then I started working for him May 22nd, 2000. Because I know it was a week and a day after I graduated college. And I worked wow. for him from May 2000 until I left in September 2012.
Wow. And then did you go to his campaign side? Or because he had this, for those that don't know, he had this real nasty primary between...
Yes.
Tim Holden and Matt Cartwright when right. they were redistricted together.
Yeah.
This gerrymandering story is all woven in this because yes. they did that on purpose to put them together.
Right. Well, they...
Sorry, I'm saying that because I've seen this stuff. If you do an analysis of like sort of reasonable ways to redo the districting in 2010,
mm-hmm.
there were many other pairings that were far more likely. In other words, if you give a computer an algorithm and say draw districts going from whatever, 19 to 18, I think, and try and keep counties together and all that, keep them compact.
Yeah.
If you do that, Cartwright, like the odds that you would end up with a Cartwright Holden
matchup
were like 1 in 10 million or whatever.
They, right, so kind of have to backtrack a little bit. Tim, and as they're drawing the map, they realize that they're going to have this like Democratic seat. And Tim had represented the old 6 from 93 to 02 and then the 17th from 03 until 12. And so we had a big redistricting fight in 02. Tim beat a 20-year incumbent by the name of George Geekes. Mm-hmm. I was one of four member versus member races in the country. Tim was the only Dem to win.
2002. Yeah, that was a bad year for Dems.
Real bad year.
Right after 9/11.
The first election after 9/11. George yeah. W. Bush was very popular.
Yeah.
And to give you some comparison, in 2004, when Tim won his first reelect in that district, he beat Scott Paterno, the son of yeah. Joe mm-hmm. Paterno. And we took 59% and George W. Bush took 58% in that district. So
wow.
right.
we obviously right. people split their votes. So
yeah.
then in 12, with the redistricting, Tom Corbett was governor, Republican House, State House, Republican State Senate. They realized they were going to have this Democratic seat somewhere in the Northeast. And
Being the state legislature?
The state legislature and the state Republicans who were involved in right. all of this. And sort of, Tim had a lot of friends on the Republican side. I was sort of like, oh, Holden's, every 2 years when he has a race, he beats us. Like, he's popular. He votes with us some of the time. You know, like, he's a good guy. So Tim yeah. actually would have had, for the first time in his 20-year congressional career, an actual Democratic district. But he voted against Obamacare twice. And there were some other things that stood out. He was had a favorable rating from the NRA. He was by and large pro-life. He had exceptions to his position on that. And you get thrown into a primary with someone like Matt Cartwright, who was a well-known trial lawyer in mm-hmm. the Scranton area, who had a weekly television show mm-hmm. Where he gave free advice and comes from very...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Comes from a politically connected... His in-laws... are very politically connected. We have father-in-law's a longtime judge.
Well, everybody's seen the Cartwright and Munley commercials. Yeah.
yeah. So, who had money, and Matt Cartwright was definitely left of Tim, and we didn't do well. So, to your question, sorry, Taylor.
Yeah.
No, so I was always on the official side. Now, I would take vacations to come up to Pennsylvania. Normally, depending on the year, the last 3 weeks of a campaign. So in 12, not the same. I would come up on my weekends. I was generally
in canvassing or something.
I was generally in the Easton area,
yeah.
Lafayette Colleges.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time there. And then
I lived in Easton for a year.
Did you? It's nice. Nice little town.
Yeah.
I had I mean, it's been a
few years. That downtown square is beautiful.
Yeah, like good restaurants. Yeah. People are out and about on Saturdays.
When I first lived in Lehigh Valley, in like 1984, there were three pawn shops, one on each corner of that. And then by the late 90s, when we lived there again, it had started to turn around. And to me, like, number of pawn shops and tattoo parlors, no offense, like in your main downtown commercial, it's kind of a rough rule of thumb for how things are going.
Yeah, and it was the mayor there, like, I want to say, like, Sal something, or Banda, or like...
I wouldn't remember.
At least this was when Tim was running in 12, and he was very popular, and I know he was credited with some of the revitalization.
So, I guess, do you have, like, an early politicizing moment that where you were like, like, that's why I got involved in politics? Because I don't really have that personally, but I don't think there was, like, a single, like... Mm. This, I'm going to get involved now, you know, like, it's just kind of let up.
If I look back at my life, right, my all 40 plus years, you know, and we were chatting before we started this, right, I try, now I'm not always good, but trying to let my life develop organically. So if I can kind of like look back on it, like right, I ran for student council secretary in seventh grade because I felt that an eighth grader should be part of the student council, and I lost, right? Yeah. And I was in our junior high was seventh through ninth grade, but then the teacher I most credit was 10th grade American government. It was Mrs. Rita Gemberling, who I just sort of, it was my first year of high school, and I just sort of love this stuff, like the history of it, but also kind of how it worked. Mm-hmm. And then the big turning point in my life, I went to Washington, D.C. In February of 1995 as a junior in high school for a program called Presidential Classroom. And they take you around and you meet with your congressional office, you meet with your Senate offices, you go to the Supreme Court, you go to the FBI building, you tour all the monuments. And I had such a great week, and I came back from, and the irony is I didn't want to go. Like, I remember, like, kind of bitching and moaning to my parents, like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is such a great opportunity. Of course, parents normally know best. Yeah. And,
push you out the door.
Yeah. And I came back, and I'm like, I want to go to college in D.C. Yeah. And that really was a life transformational moment in my life, was that's when I got hooked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I jokingly say when I ran for secretary, but if I look back on it, like, that was sort of like my first like political activism, so to speak. Yeah.
But listening
in seventh grade, I actually also ran for student council vice president and lost. Yeah.
And good things will happen.
Yeah. Never run for something since. Actually, that's not true.
Yeah, no, but it's interesting too that like sort of like your story about the student council and then in high school, it's like an interest in like the structure and the process more than like a particular issue. Like, I think some people would be like, oh, well, like the young people, they'd be like the school shooting in Parkland. That was the moment. But, you know, but I feel like those things can kind of imprint, you know, like I myself also tend to be more interested in like the structure and the process. And I wouldn't say there was ever one issue that really politicized me.
Yeah.
And I never thought of it like that until you just said it, but that's really the same way. Like, I wound up handling Tim's transportation committee work for 7 years.
Right.
And now with the work I do in DC, like, we do a lot of infrastructure work and like
and that's about
I wasn't even thinking about that in college.
Right.
Yeah.
But now here, and I find it interesting. Right.
But it's like both metaphorically and literally, it's like the playing field that other things happen on. I mean, I'm on borough council and so we might get to that, but you know, I just started, but I'm like, we spend a lot of money on roads, you know. Like and it's needed, but at the same time I'm like, how much is that kind of shaping everything else, right? It eats up so much of the budget. And if we wanted to do other things about quality of life, where's that balance?
Eating up the local budget?
Yeah.
Yeah. One, there's... I don't want to go on a diatribe, but there hasn't been enough federal investment in infrastructure.
But I'm also a little bit like, you know, I don't like the way a lot of our land development is so car-centered and all of that. And, you know, people don't like that. But then we don't always look at what are the sort of deep factors driving that.
Yeah. You know, I was just at a township meeting and, you know, I think three people were there complaining about, you know, how this one road, you know, is just so deadly for pedestrians and
there was just a death.
There was just a death. And then we spent, you know, 5-10 minutes talking about, oh man, it's just terrible. And they're like, well, we don't have any money to fix it. And then the next thing on the agenda was approving $250,000 to repave a road. It's just like, oh my God. Are you kidding me? Like, we've given no thought into, this is the time, to at least open up, talk about it,
to at least start the dialogue.
Yeah.
They shut it off there.
So did you, we talked about the Commonwealth Strategic Partners. Is that the right name?
Yes.
So that's public relations and how do you describe it?
I mean, it's a lobbying firm, consulting firm.
Yeah. So is lobbying is it one of those things that it's a four letter word when it's the other people and it's a good word when it's your side? Do people ever go like, ooh, you're a lobbyist?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Gotta take it in stride.
I don't think because here's lobbying is bad, right? Because people see it as money in politics
and special interests,
and it really kind of started with President Obama. Like, he was not a fan of lobbyists. He wasn't going to have a lot of lobbyists at certain levels of his administration. And then, Donald Trump came along and drained the swamp. And, mm-hmm. right? And it's just like – and then you have things happen where members of Congress, when it comes to, earmarking appropriations, Congress now no longer earmarks projects. But, you had a Republican congressman from Southern California, Duke Cunningham, who had – a boat bought for him and his house bought for him and prostitutes. And then you had William Jefferson from New Orleans, Democratic mm-hmm. congressman, who had a freezer full of,
money,
cash.
Oh, cash. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's Jack Abramoff. And so mm-hmm. those things were, kind of lobbyists had a role in all of that. But when you break it down, now some folks can spend a lot of money, right? Like Facebook spends a lot of money on mm-hmm. lobbyists. Yeah. Comcast spends a lot of money on
AT&T.
AT&T. Yeah. But then, one of our clients is the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. So it's the union for the mechanics for Southwest and Alaska Airlines. So, it's 3,500, 4,000 members nationwide. And those guys can't be in D.C. because they're fixing planes or they're preparing planes to fly.
Yeah. Right.
And there aren't even enough where, you might have to go work on a plane in Baltimore and you're in Philly or Boston or somewhere and they got to fly you to go work on that plane and people are sitting on the plane or sitting in the airport delayed.
Yeah.
And they're not breaking the bank to hire my business partner's name is George McAvoy. They're not breaking the bank to hire George and me. But, there are things that affect their livelihoods that are happening in D.C. So that's why they brought us on, because they can't
always be there.
They can't be there. And so why not hire some folks who know how it works and it can help them? And I think we've been helpful.
And have an eye on the transportation stuff.
Yeah. There was an FAA bill in 2016 where we got some language for them. I don't want to, again, go down a rabbit hole of policy, but the mechanics in the United States are drug and alcohol and back tested and background checked, in the U.S., but they are not, we call them at foreign repair stations, right? And a lot of U.S. carriers or U.S. Manufacturers, like the Boeings of the world, they contract their repair work overseas. Well, those mechanics, mm-hmm. Aren't drug and alcohol tested or background checked, and we got some language in the FAA bill in 2016 to mandate that. And it helps level the playing field.
Yeah.
But the mechanic at Philadelphia Airport who's working on Southwest planes, he's working on Southwest planes. He can't get down to D.C. to advocate that. And, he's a smart guy, but he's also where do I begin? Who do I begin with? The committee structure, all that. So there are folks who, I say this all the time to people. Everything that happens on Capitol Hill, and we're in an era now that's like everything that happens at the White House is the news, but daily, hundreds to thousands of things are being thousands of things are being discussed, and hundreds of thousands of things are happening that impact everyday Americans. And it's, in my opinion, and I guess maybe I say it with some bias, but it's important to have someone in town who's paying attention for you. Otherwise, you could get screwed, or the other side.
Yeah,
I don't mean the other side politically, but the other, like, your competition could mm-hmm. be benefiting and you're not. I mean, so I think there is certainly value to having lobbyists and lobbying. Now, like any profession, there are bad actors. But, you know, it's a necessary component of how DC works.
Do you have a, like, a proudest moment in your political, like, what is your...
I do.
Yeah.
So, and I'm...
Go ahead.
Make sure I get the year right, but, Tim Holden had voted, against stem cell research, and then he voted to sustain President Bush's veto, of stem cell research. And then we were in the majority, so I don't know if it was... So I'm guessing it would have had to been 2009.
Probably after the 2006.
Well, but Obama would have been president.
Okay. There was a majority in 2006? Wasn't there a way?
Yeah, well, 2007, 2008, but Bush had vetoed the initial go.
Okay.
And Tim had voted no, and he voted to sustain the president's veto, and we were back at it. And he really did his homework. We met with folks at the NIH, and he met with folks at Hershey Medical Center, the researchers. And it was really one of these great things where citizen lobbyists and even, you know, these groups have lobbyists at their associations in D.C., but folks with Lou Gehrig's disease or juvenile diabetes or leukemia, you know, came in. And the stories, you know, they had a very strong impact on Tim, where these folks saw hope in stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned earlier that Tim was, you know, pro-life, and he was conflicted between where he stood. He's a practicing Catholic and stem cell research, and he by learning it, he knew that stem cell was the right thing, but he was conflicted. And we were voting on it, and I tell you, I was like watching an ulcer develop, because like he was back and forth. Should I be, you know, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And the day of the vote, my chief of staff actually went to lunch. I think she had enough. And he called me in. He called me into his office. Am I allowed to curse on here? Mm-hmm.
We fucking curse all the time. This is why we're not on the radio.
So he calls me into his office, and he was like, and so how, just so you have a, like kind of a physical idea of how the office is set up, you walked into the front, off to the left was the legislative staff, directly behind the front office was the chief of staff's office, and to the right was Tim's office.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to like, I had to go through her office into Tim's office. So I get to like his doorway, and he's in his desk. He's like, how's everyone in the back want me to vote? And I was like, well, we all want you to support. He goes, oh, you're all a bunch of fucking liberals. So I have, you know, it's all of like a 6-second walk from his desk back to my desk, and my phone's ringing, and he's like, get in here, I can't be alone. So I was like, all right. So he's like, tell me what you think. And I was like, look, Tim, whatever you decide, like, we will, you know, we're going to be okay. But, you know, I really think that, you know, you've done the homework and you know where your heart is on this. And I was like, look, Tim, you know, and I know him intimately, right? I've spent so much time with him. You always do what you think is the right thing for your constituents or what your constituents would want, even if you might not necessarily agree, but because a majority of them think this way. And you always walk that line. And I was like, Tim, they vote for you and they send you here. This Republican district sends you to Congress as a Democrat because they trust you. Mm-hmm. And they believe that you make decisions in their interests. And I was like, this is one of those times. And, you know, and there are procedural stuff. There's a motion to recommit and previous question. And I sort of told him, you know, vote, you know, yes on the previous question, yes on the motion to recommit to kind of cover yourself. And then and I was like, you know, vote for it. And he's like, all right, you know, but he wasn't, you know, and I sort of walked out. And I'd say, you know, Tim and I have really had two heart-to-hearts our whole life. And one was the day after he lost, but the other one was this day. And I was in there for probably 30 minutes. It was obviously a much longer conversation than that. And, you know, I walked out and I just sort of let him be by himself. And my chief of staff came back and, you know, he left and we didn't know. And we bet, you know, we did a little pool in the office, you know, like how he was going to vote. And we included all the votes and he wound up voting for it. Wow. And, you know, a few months ago, a friend of mine put something on Facebook about, well, I don't want to get this too incorrect, but I believe his wife had stem cell treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it to him. I was like, you know, you made the right call. And he's like, yeah, I see. You know, thank you. Appreciate hearing that. And he's like, he did. You're right, I did. But he struggled with it.
Yeah.
And he wrestled with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I believe he made the right decision. And I wasn't going to, like, quit if he voted
right.
no.
Right.
You know, because it wasn't my name on the door. But I just, you know, I thought it was the right thing. And he did, too. And I knew he did.
Yeah.
And it might have been different if he didn't do his homework. But he really, you know,
he did
do his homework. Now, the other part of that story is that, you know, the bishop's office, we had the Allentown Diocese, we had and the Harrisburg Diocese and the bishop's office called the next day. And I had to field those phone calls.
Yeah. yeah.
But no, so that's my, individually, that's my, you know, I feel like I played a part in something that I think is right and important. And
has helped a lot of people.
And helped a lot of people. And Tim, you know, to his credit, he trusted my judgment, not just there, almost all the time, but, you know, he trusted my judgment enough to, like, where he wanted to really know. It moved past me being his legislative director to, what do you, Keith Pemmer, think, like, as a human being? So it was a really, for me, it was a very special moment.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great story.
Thanks.
Should we switch to the campaign stuff?
Let's do it.
So yeah. I think the one of the interesting questions is, you know, I've done a little bit of campaign, but you're probably not the typical, like, campaign manager because you have so much experience in other things, right? Did something like, is this like the, you know, I tried to get away and they pulled me back in?
What is a typical campaign?
I don't know.
Manager? I don't even know.
There are a myriad of folks who, there are people who just live a campaign life.
Right. I guess that's what I'm thinking.
Campaign managers, and they can jump from state to state, district to district. They might work for, like, county parties or state parties, but then they kind of bounce back, and depending on the year, into a campaign. Yeah.
Which, for the record, I think is totally unsustainable. I tried doing that. It's just miserable.
I would never, you know, I've done, you know, where I'd come up for about 3 weeks prior, depending on the year, for some of Tim's campaigns. And no, like, I love the rush of it, but then I'm like, all right, I'm back to, I want to go back to, like, having some sort of normalcy in my life. As I'm noticing, you know, I've been up here now full time for a little over 3 weeks, and, you know, I'm pretty healthy eater. That's sort of gone out the window a little bit. I'm not getting to the gym regularly.
Yeah.
I practice yoga. I've been to yoga once in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, campaigns tend to have pig roasts, not salad
right.
bars.
Yeah, exactly.
As you know, like, I try and go to different diners for breakfast. Just to, like, you know,
spice it up a bit.
Yeah, and, like, see what I can hear.
Yeah.
And,
great. I love diner talk.
Yeah, I do too, but it's eggs and hash browns and toast and sausage or bacon, right? And it's, you know, I try and get the bowl of fruit every now and again. Just,
yeah, exactly.
Fucking liberal.
Right. I know. Damn bananas. Silly grapes.
So what pulled you into this, you know? You knew Denny?
Yeah, so he and Tim actually go back.
Okay.
You know, Denny was Governor Rendell's Secretary of Agriculture, and Tim was, for a long time, the number two Democrat on the House Agriculture Committee. Now, I actually did not handle agriculture policy, but I'd met Denny, you know, and I knew his story. I knew him to be a good person. Everyone had good things to say about him. And actually, I have a really good buddy from college. His name's Pat Moore, who spent a good amount of time growing up in Millville.
And interesting.
His
he probably knew Denny.
He did. His younger sister is actually very close with one of Denny's sons. When Denny became Pennsylvania Secretary of Agriculture, I mean, my buddy Pat would always be like, "Yo, Denny Wolf from Millville, Pennsylvania." Pat sort of talked him up as, you know, the legend of Millville. You know, the new maps come out. It's the new 9th district. It includes Schuylkill County, where Tim is from, and then includes about 3/4 of Berks County and all of Lebanon County. So those three counties were all part of Tim's 17th district, and they're about 2/3 of the new 9th. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So
by population.
By population, yeah. So Berks is the largest. I feel like it's got about, 6,000. Folks, and then Schuylkill and Lebanon are over 70,000 each.
And you have all of Berks County?
No, we have about 3/4 of it.
I see.
Yeah, we don't have the city of Reading.
Okay.
For those listening, we're looking at a map.
Yeah.
We don't have the city of Reading, we don't go there. And we don't have this little sliver, actually, which is where I went to high school in Boyertown.
Mm.
But we have a bulk of it.
Right. But at least Reading's not split in half, which is what the probably, and I don't remember the old map, but that's the kind of.
Reading was in the old 16th, which is Whitesmucker. Right.
Yeah, but I think it was one of these things where they drew a district that came out, grabbed Reading, and then
that's
went
what
back.
It was Lancaster County, yeah. Chester County, and then right. grabbed part of Chester County, right. then grabbed Reading.
Yeah.
So I called Tim and I, what are the prospects for Denny winning this? And he's like, I really think Denny can win it. He's the right type of Democrat that can win a district like this.
Yeah.
It's a district that's very red if you look at it. President Trump took 68%. Registration is Republican. Just under 11% Republican advantage, and the PVI is anywhere from like 14 to 18, depending on what year you start. So, right on paper, it's like, why is a Democrat even running? Yeah.
But, look at Colin Peterson out in Minnesota, those PVIs don't really matter that much.
They don't matter. And I still firmly believe that politics is about people.
Mm-hmm.
And Denny's the right type of guy. He's a dairy farmer. So, I was helping, so Denny won the primary. I had been in contact with his campaign. He came down to D.C. After he won the primary to meet with some folks. So I set up two meet and greets for him. I set up two other meetings for him. And I was kind of helping him on officially. And the following week, I had a phone call with them. His son, Tim, had been helping him and still is helping him. We got off the phone. He sort of jokingly said, you want to come run a campaign? I was like, no. And it was tongue-in-cheek, but there was obviously some truth to it in his question. And, like, we got off the phone call. There was some action items from the week prior and people who I felt he needed to talk to and some follow-up items for them. And I got off the phone, and I was getting taken a bus to a meeting, and so I had to walk, like, a block up the street but across the street. And, like, in that walk, and going back to the Raging Cajun, like, I do not think I'm James Carville, but, like, the idea came in my head. I was like, he's not going to win this unless I go do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed someone who gave him legitimacy in D.C., but also knows this district, knows these types of folks, knows what it takes for a Democrat to, and he's of the Tim Holden mold. So I was helping them find a campaign manager. And I talked to a few people, Tim Holden being the first person.
Did you pull a Cheney? Were you the head of the
search committee? Yeah, I did. The fix is
I've looked around, and the best guy
is me.
touche. The good thing is there are so many Democrats running across the country.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to jump in just for a second also, just because I actually I'm probably going to make enemies, but like the model of like the Ronin samurai warrior who goes around to any district, I'm like, especially not Denny, but if you're a first time candidate, I'm sure that's seductive, but is that really the best person? You know this district.
Right.
Or big chunks of it.
Yeah, I know big chunks of it.
And you're from here.
I'm from here. I know Pennsylvania. I know Pennsylvania politics. I know people we need to talk to.
Exactly.
And I was unofficially a part of Tim's races. And mm-hmm. The other thing is, right, like, Tim lives in this district. What better political brain to pick?
Yeah, for sure.
Is he on the kitchen cabinet or the...
No, Tim is officially, he has to be limited in his role because he is the chair of the Liquor Control Board in Harrisburg.
Oh, okay.
So he can't do anything, like, officially. But I don't know if I just got him in trouble. But
and you just said he's not involved.
So. He's not involved. No, but I talked to Tim every day. I talked to Tim every day for the last 7 years, from 2000 and October of 2005 until I left in 2012. And we talked mm-hmm. many times daily. And we've remained very close since. And, obviously I consulted him. Should I go do this? I talked to, a couple other people. Obviously my business partner was very important part of, this decision making, mm-hmm. he's fully supportive. He's hand on the reins while I'm away. He gets it. So talked to a couple other people just to, was it the right move for me professionally as well? And everyone was basically, there's nothing to lose.
2018 is the year.
Yeah. And so I talked to Denny, I think it was like a Thursday night. I went to yoga, actually. I was like, I need to get,
totally get that.
And I talked to him, and he was, he's like, we talked about it. We didn't think this would be something you'd be interested in. And I was like, I got to be honest, it wasn't. Then the idea sort of came in my head. after I talked to your son. And he's like, well, we'd love to have you. So I came up the next week. We got lunch in Lebanon. I forget the name of it. There's a brewery in downtown Lebanon that we had lunch and hammered it out. And I agreed to it. I needed to finish some things up in D.C. For the month of June. So I was doing that and just, you know, providing some advice and consent with the, you know, just the Supreme Court, yeah. to borrow a phrase, right? Mm-hmm. And for June. And then I've been up full time since July 1st.
Cool. And do you have, like, you have an apartment here? Or
they... My brother lives in the district. He lives in Robinsonia in Western Berks County. So I've been staying with him, which is great. I get to see my five-year-old nephew, who's also my godson, Jackson. So, you know, when I'm...
What a joy.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I get to, you know, 4 months with them. And now, granted, I'm not always there, or he's asleep when I get home or something, you know. But that's really special for me as well. And then my brother can go vote for Denny. Yeah. On November 6th. So that's where I'm staying. So I'm in Western Berks. Our campaign headquarters is Millville, where Denny's from. But we just opened our Berks office, and we're actually having an office warming this Saturday. As I mentioned before, it's our largest county, so we really want to have a strong presence and you know, let the folks at Berks know we're not only will Denny be there for the campaign, but once he wins, he will have an office there in Berks County.
So you guys have two offices right now? Millville.
Yeah, Millville and Berks, and then we'll be opening a third office in Lebanon. We have the space. It just needs a little bit of cleaning up, and then we'll launch that one as well. And then we have some spaces.
Yeah, and there's a Democratic Party office here in Columbia County, right?
In Columbia. Millville's in Columbia as well.
So we have that. Oh, and in Bloomsburg, rather.
Yep. Yeah. Democratic space in Schuylkill County and Pottsville, and then one in Carbon County as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should probably jump into some of the campaign stuff.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
How does a Democrat win in your red area?
The stupid answer is you win one more vote, but...
Yeah.
Well, but that's what it is, right?
But how do you do that?
Yeah.
I feel...
And you have particular knowledge, specialized knowledge in this.
You know, it's... it's going to be hard. I'm not going to lie. First starts with the candidate, right? Denny's the right candidate. He's a dairy farmer. He's been a farmer his whole life. He was Governor Rendell's ag secretary. That's an important part of this district. And
deep roots.
Deep roots. Our opponent doesn't even live in the congressional district.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he lives in Luzerne County, but not in the district. Right. So Denny was born on the farm. He now owns and operates.
Yeah.
Right. Denny also founded Camp Victory.
Oh, right.
Which is a camp for children with special needs. Is just Denny's life speaks to farming, but community service and public service. Mm-hmm. And he's not.
It's like the Jeffersonian ideal.
Right. It's sort of like who these founding fathers envisioned should go to Washington. He's the right type of Democrat to win it. He's not. I kind of hate the label, folks, but he's more in the middle of the political spectrum for a candidate and a Democrat. He's been endorsed by the Blue Dog Coalition down in D.C., which is Tim Holden was a former Blue Dog. It's conservative Democrats by and large. So he fits that mold, but he really take the farming component, right? Farmers are struggling right now. Mm-hmm. These tariffs
especially
are...
Especially dairy farmers.
Dairy farmers and soybean farmers. Mm-hmm. And I can't speak intelligently on this topic. He is like an encyclopedia on it. But they're hurting. They're struggling. And Denny gets that. And a lot of farmers tend to be Republicans. But I've seen him interact with these folks or speak to, you know, Farm Bureau boards. And I see the connection because, like, he is one of them. And they understand that. And I think that transcends what a D or an R behind someone's name. It's like, he understands the life I live.
Mm-hmm.
And couple that with, he understands like working families, like folks who he raised 5 kids all through public school, you know, all went to college. Like, or I don't know if they all went to college. Sorry. I might've misspoke there. But you know, I believe 4 of them, I don't know if all of them did. But you know, he's raised a family and, in this congressional district as a dairy farmer, you know, and that's what I think most people want is they want to make sure, you know, they want to be able to go to sleep at night knowing that they're financially secure. And that doesn't mean that their stocks are, you know, crushing it up on Wall Street.
Very few Americans actually own stocks.
Right.
And the ones who do own them in retirement plans usually.
Yeah. But retirement plans are, right, like something that these folks hopefully aspire to, that they have some put away a little bit for retirement.
I mean, so that just hit one of my like kind of pet peeves sometimes is, you know, the stock market up, down, like very few people can look at it and be like, I'm wealthy or not wealthy today.
Right.
Based on the stock market.
Right.
Have you ever...
But it's over... I feel like it's overreported in, like, the media.
Oh, it is. It's such a barometer for how well the economy's doing.
But, gas prices, rental prices, health insurance prices.
The price of milk, the price of a loaf of bread, a gallon of gas. Like, those are... In this district, that's what people care about.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the documentary Man with a Plan about Fred Tuttle's... it's a mockumentary about his run for U.S. Senate in Vermont.
I don't know who Fred Tuttle is.
Oh, he's this dairy farmer that in 1996 he made a mockumentary about him running for Congress.
But he really was running.
Well, in 1998, when the U.S. Senate was actually up, he ended up running, and there was this, and he was a Republican. There was this carpetbagger from Massachusetts or something like that that ran in the Republican primary and like dumped $1 million into it. And Fred Tuttle entered the race against him and did really absolutely nothing. But during the debate, they had a chance to ask each other a question.
Okay.
And Fred asked him how many teats a cow has, and he didn't get it right. And apparently, you know, that's sort of what people say tanked him. And so Fred actually won the primary. I think he spent like $20 or something like that. And then endorsed Patrick Leahy.
That's hilarious. Yes. What's it called?
It's called Man with a Plan.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it.
But he didn't have a plan. Sounds like
he sort of had a plan.
Sort of
had a plan.
Well, and actually,
his plan was no plan.
Yeah.
And actually, the reason why he ran for Congress was to pay. The tagline is he didn't have any knowledge or special qualifications, but he needed a job where he would get health care for his dad. And so Congress fit the bill.
Hmm.
Yeah. Someone with no...
right there. I mean, they had really good health care in the 90s.
Yeah.
So
do you feel like...
Anyway, Danny should ask Dan Muser how many kids he now has if they get a chance.
We shouldn't put the answer. I think it's 8.
It's 4.
Four.
It's 4.
Wow. If it has 8, it's a Chernobyl cow, I guess.
you would have lost.
I would have lost. Jordan. Yeah. I've been mobbed.
Danny would definitely win.
Yeah.
In my study abroad, I was studying abroad earlier, I was in Costa Rica on a tiny farm, and I remember the like 9-year-old girl who could, of course, totally outmilk the cow compared to me. And this was very funny because I was this big and strapping, and I did like 3 tugs. I was like, "Oh my god, my forearm's flying off!" And she's like, "Gringo, blah 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 blah."
I think Danny would win cow milking competition.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe he should challenge Dan Muser to a milking competition.
That's a good idea.
I love that.
Yeah, he would win that. But I even think in farm, you know, farm setting forums, he'll do all right as well.
Yeah, because Dan's a business person, right?
He
motorized wheelchairs.
Yeah, and scooters. Pride Mobility is the name of the company.
Yeah,
I really thought Pride Mobility. I thought it was like a place that pimps out your Camaro if you're gay. I mean, I was like,
yeah. We'll do any kind of rainbow that's right. job you want.
I don't know if he's the most ethical businessman. There's been some issues with Pride Mobility over the years.
Didn't his company actually get fined for hiring illegal immigrants?
Illegal workers, yep. $21,000 for hiring 3 illegal workers. They're fined like $80,000 for Medicare fraud.
Oh, because
really?
That's,
oh, yeah.
That seems like an area. There was
that Medicare health... fraud is...
Medicare fraud, software piracy. I think it was like a $300,000 fine for that. Yeah, so
You know,
He's hitting all the... No. Yeah. I mean, all the right notes with...
You know, one of the things...
Live in the district.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could speak to this or Denny would, but sort of a longstanding concern of mine is that, like, we just, on the left broadly, the Democratic Party on the left, like, we can't figure out how to address one of the key things about immigration, which is that our economy and our corporate class are addicted to cheap labor, right? And so now, you know, people have this anger, whether it's accurate or not, about especially Latino immigrants and jobs and wages, and the focus to me of enforcement should be around like employment, right? But that doesn't happen, and I feel like very few Democratic politicians like will talk about that. Like they keep getting pulled into talking about whether or not immigrants should be here or why they're here, all right. that. And that's their playing ground. And the playing ground should be, you know, we have a system in this country that for 30 or 40 years has been addicted to cheap labor. I'm using addicted on purpose. And we need to address that because they don't come to like, no, like they, people come because they're looking for work.
Yeah.
Like and obviously, the, I mean, they're not like, hey, I really want to go break America's immigration laws.
Right. I mean, it's they're looking for better lives for their families, right?
Yeah.
And the number one, you know, for lack of a word thing, because I can't think of a better word right now, for that is the money they make.
Mm-hmm.
The American economy would collapse might be too strong a word, but like I don't think people realize how dependent we are on like immigrants for not just labor, but like they spend money.
Yeah,
like, and I'm not. Yeah. They're not.
This idea that they're just takers, you know, is ridiculous.
No, they spend money. They don't save a lot of money. I mean, the money they make is going normally right back into the economy. And I mean,
that's true for any working class people.
You know? Want to like kick them out of the country, and it's like, do you have? Concept of like what that means, like the ripple effect that would create?
The studies show that immigrants add a boost to local economies.
Yeah.
And the taco trucks.
I saw there's one.
I know.
Like, there's one across the street here in downtown Bloomfield.
It's
definitely improved the American palate.
Yeah, exactly. I had to run over there and get a taco before it
was it good?
Oh, it was really good. Yeah. It was really good.
But back to like one thing, like we were talking about, you know, you were talking about your Raging Cajun moment. Like, you know, I thought I'd be working on a business of like a locally sourced food kind of business. That's where I thought I was headed around the time Trump got elected. And I decided like, look, I have some time. I should work like broadly on political change. So I've been involved in a lot of like grassroots, you know, grassroots resistance groups that have popped up. I know Berks County has a huge Indivisible.
Indivisible. The Kutztown area Democrats are very active.
Columbia County Indivisible is also, you know, had a real upsurge. So I'm curious, like, how do you think that might affect like either the electorate, you know, when you think about like planning and like who's going to vote, do you think that those groups are going to lead to more turnout? Like, Can you work with them, or do you think it's better to like let them do their thing and you're kind of working parallel, but maybe not?
I mean, it's a combination of both, right? One thing I've noticed, and again, I've only been up here for 3 weeks, but so it's just a snapshot. But you know, folks who are Democrats or are voting Democrat in November are very motivated. So I have met with some of, you know, the more liberal groups in our district. Well, I mean, first off, Denny doesn't win without Republicans voting for him and independents voting for him. I mean, just the math is
right.
That's basic facts. I mean, we're not going to ignore anyone. I'm not going to not talk to a Republican who might not even vote for Denny, because that's not what this is about. Like, Denny's running to represent the whole district, not just a certain sect of the district. But in talking, you know, I've met with a range of folks with different interests and different political ideologies or ideas on how to win or what needs to happen. Yeah. You know, I've met with folks who, like, when we talk about Denny, right? If you in Pennsylvania, we have, you know, Tom Wolf's running for re-election as governor, Bob Casey's running for re-election as senator, and then in this district, Denny's running for Congress. You know, of the three, Denny is the most centric or right of, you know, on the Democratic spectrum, right? But folks who like either they believe Governor Wolf's going to win, they believe Senator Casey's going to win, and you know, they really see the fight is flipping the U.S. House.
Yeah,
and they're like, we're
and
all
the
in
fight's
for
right here.
The fight's here. We're all in for Denny. Like,
yeah,
Pennsylvania. Democrats are going to pick up seats in Pennsylvania. It's a matter of how many. Two are definitely going to pick up in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. Madeline Dean in the 5th, and Mary Gay Scanlon in the 4th, and I think Chrissy Houlihan will win in the 6th. So now you're looking at those three should win, and then, so that's really a net of two though, because Brendan Boyle moves into the old Bob Brady seat in Philly. Then you got in the 1st Brian Fitzpatrick. Republican incumbents in a tough fight. You've got the old Charlie Dent seat in the Lehigh Valley, which is
that woman,
Susan Wilde for the Dems and Marty Nostein for the
Republicans. I really liked Greg Edwards. It's really bummed.
You got that was a tough primary for all three.
It was, and I mean, I've heard him speak. I just think he could have been a really transformative person. I don't know a lot about her.
She was sort of like the middle candidate of the
Planned Parenthood. Big time.
Especially towards the end.
This was easy. This is one of these things that could, you know, put a lot of fractures in the broad left coalition. As I keep calling it the broad left, but
I think, and I've sort of struggled with this, and I dealt with this when I worked for Tim. You know, he was a Democrat who knocked off a 20-year Republican in 2002, mm-hmm. beat Joe Paterno's kid, had a tough race in 10. He beat State Senator David Argel when Democrats got crushed across the country. You know, and then in 12, we get primaried, and the environmental groups and some of the others were ready to, you know,
eat them alive.
Yeah, just stick the shiv in them. And I mean, and we lost, right? And they won. But it's sort of like, I have this problem of like eating, like, what works in New York City or works in Philadelphia or works in Los Angeles or Chicago
doesn't work.
It's not the same, right? And we have to be, the folks here in Central PA need to be accepting of like the needs of New York City are different. So it's okay who they elect. And then the folks in New York City, you know, need to be accepting of, you know, the needs of Central PA and who they elect. And, you know, ultimately the same goal is, I believe Democrats have is like respect for humanity, right? And like doing what they can to make sure that people can live, you know, the best lives in the most peaceful conditions possible. Now, there's going to be some disagreements, but ultimately that's really what I've, you know, I think today in 2018 where Democrats kind of are. And, you know, so a race like Denny's, like another reason I'm like happy to be here is like, you know, this is a seat that, you know, I have a lot, like, I'm really proud of Denny. Like, he's got a lot of courage to put his name on the line in a district that mm-hmm. Trump took with 68%.
Yeah.
Most people look at those numbers and be like, no chance. Right. And he's like, no, I have a chance.
And in fact, there were three people in the primary.
Three people, right. And
I think that's good for the long-term health of the party.
I think it's great. We've seen a rise of people running for office. We talked about it, I think, prior to recording, but, you know, women running, like, mm-hmm. it's the year of the woman. There's an abundance of women.
Yeah.
It's great.
And even, like, Alexandra, what's her name? Campbell? Ocasio.
Cortez.
To me, like Ocasio Cortez, or you know who we're talking about. Who upset?
Who's just in?
You just be Joe Crowley.
And I
Cortez.
Feel like,
oh jeez, this is terrible.
I think it's
Ocasio Cortez.
Ocasio Cortez. Yeah.
So it's the year of the woman. We can't remember her name. No, we know.
She was just in Kansas with a rally.
Yeah, she's just in St. Louis too.
Okay, but I've seen her.
I have a comment on.
I've also seen her commenting about how people need to understand that her district was the one for her to win in, like basically saying you need to find the right person for the right district.
Yes.
Like to me, you know, that's positive to hear. But what did you?
I would say with her, she was critical of Crowley, rightfully, of not being in his district, and then now she's like out there, you know, barnstorming the country, and it's like, you know. You don't have all the answers yet. Like, yes, you pulled off a major upset, like, absolutely kudos to her. Yeah. But, like, you know.
I saw a picture of her shoes that she posted with just holes in the bottom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she.
Yeah, look, that was a jolt of energy into a party that needs it. I mean, let's be honest, the leadership in the House is.
Yeah.
They're on the top three or in their 70s.
Yeah.
You know,
Nancy Pelosi's done a lot of good things, but I can imagine. You know, or like Biden thinking about running. I'm like, you're too focused on like your legacy. Like the best thing you can do for your legacy is step aside and let some new leadership come along.
And bolster, which he actually has been doing, and I've been really happy.
Who, Biden?
Biden has just been bolstering young people
good.
And new people.
But when he talks about running again, I'm just like, or Bernie. I thought Bernie was great, his platform more than him, but I'm just like, no, Bernie. Like you did a great thing. Time for other people, because it needs to be more than a cult of your personality too.
Yeah, yes. And my personal thing with it is that they literally hold the most power by people thinking that they might run for president. Like that gives them
because people pay attention to them.
Potential presidential candidate Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden or you know whoever.
You're saying because they can use that attention that's on them for other
it's
things.
It's leverage. Yeah. If Joe Biden comes
out and says,
"I'm definitely not
people
running,"
pay attention to him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but I think Biden's different, right? Like, I think I think Bernie's still holding on a little bit to 2016. Just personal opinion. Full disclosure: I did not vote for him in the primary.
That's okay. We can still be friends.
Okay. I think, you know, Biden's different, right?
Like, the D.C. primary was a wash anyway. Yeah. I don't know if you vote in D.C.
I do vote in D.C. Okay. Biden, I think, is different, right? Because he was Joe Biden even before he became Vice President Joe Biden. You know, yeah. And my dad, you know, growing up in sort of like ex-urban Philadelphia, my dad loved Joe Biden. Well, still, to this day, loves Joe Biden. You know, I actually got him his book for Christmas. You know, but he was sort of like the third senator, right? And, you know, he was big smile. He'd run for president before, and he's sort of like this known entity. Yeah. And then he becomes Barack Obama's vice president.
He ran in 2008.
He ran in 2008, yeah. I actually voted for him in the primary in 2008. It was over by then, but I was like, I always sort of wanted to vote for Joe Biden. So I think Biden's I know what you're saying, and I agree, and there's definitely this, like, cult of personality. But I think Biden running for president or not running for president, he's still Joe Biden and he still carries a lot of weight. And like,
yeah, his legacy, he doesn't need to do anything.
He gets the issues that are affecting working families. Like you know, and to Bernie's credit, I mean, Bernie was talking about these economic issues. For me personally, I just thought it was a little too pie in the sky. But, you know, but Biden's been talking about these things his whole career. And he's lived it, right? Like the tragic death of his first wife and child, and
right,
taking the train to Delaware and D.C. back and forth, and
yeah,
you know, he's had this incredible life, but it's been a very, you know, I'm not going to do the story justice, but the loan for his mortgage and Obama was going to cut him the check, and Biden like teared up and like, but I mean, Joe Biden is by no means a wealthy man. I mean, he's mm-hmm. a famous man
mm-hmm.
who's accomplished a lot, but he's also lived this life of you know, tragedy, mm-hmm. and you know, he's worked for everything he's had, and it's still like, for me, and this is just me speaking, but I think it also for a lot of people, like, there's an authenticity to Joe Biden that even if he doesn't run for president, it's
hard to be,
it's still there, and where, like, with some of the others, whether it's Bernie or anyone else sitting in the Senate right now, you know, it's like, are you doing this?
I don't know if you really want to get an authenticity off with Bernie Sanders. I mean,
no, I'm thinking more of some of these other, you know, Elizabeth Warrens mm-hmm. and Kamala Harris's and Cory mm-hmm. Booker's, like, who are, you know, being floated, Kirsten Gillibrand's, like, who are being floated for president. And it's like, I guess I'm not so much question. It's what's the motivation, right? Like, where.
I would agree that at this point, just specifically in terms of Bernie Sanders, like, running again seems more about him as opposed to, like, you know, his mission. And, like, I wouldn't support him. Well, it depends on who else.
I
want to
see, like,
he's just too damn old.
Buttigieg or somebody like that run.
Out of,
like,
South Bend?
Yeah. Like, that would be awesome. You know, just somebody new and, like, a fresh
somebody's
face.
Fresh.
And, and just a lot of energy. I had hoped that Jason Kander might do it, but I saw he's running for mayor of St. Louis.
Yeah, it's St. Louis? Yeah, Missouri. He and I went to American together. He's younger than me, so we don't really know each other. But mm-hmm. we were in college. I think he was a freshman when I was a senior.
But I want to come back a little bit because this is interesting. Like, you know, the whole, like, yeah, we need to wrap up some too. Well, we probably do, but kind of like.
Damn, user's smiling. Keep him there.
Yeah. Like, like sort of moderate and left and right. Like mm-hmm. I believe in a bigger, you know, a big tent for Democrats. And at the same time, as somebody who identifies as pretty liberal and progressive, and I don't love labels,
mm-hmm.
like Blue Dog Coalition, some of the stuff in the 90s and the aughts, I feel like there were a lot of politicians, Bill Clinton with like the Sister Soldier movement, who were like, I'm going to win by triangulating and fighting the culture wars like more on Republican turf. And that's to me. So that's, I think, problematic both short-term and long-term because I feel like it's seeding it's kind of too much of like the narrative frames to what the right is set up. And mm-hmm. the other one is, and you've probably seen this, if you try and measure policy proposals on kind of a left-right continuum, if in the, you know, 60s, 70s, even the 80s a little bit, you know, this was the left, right, here's the left, here's the right, visual medium. But anyway, I'm trying to make a continuum.
He used his left hand for the left and his right hand for the right,
Thank
for
you.
The record.
But, you know, we shifted this way, right? Like Obamacare. Let me start over. Obamacare is Romneycare, right? We all know that just in terms of, and what I worry about with the, not that there's a moderate part of the Democratic coalition, of course there's going to be, but somehow, like in the last generation or so, the way that it's either been positioned or used it, leveraged its own power, like it seems like short-term battles have led to contributing to that rightward shift. So to me, it's like, how do we protect the moderate flank, but in a way that doesn't sell out our broader coalition? I guess I would put it that way. And I don't have an easy answer, but that's when I get a little bit nervous. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, Denny needs to run to win, for sure. Right. Or maybe we should stick with Tim.
This fight isn't fought in the ninth.
No.
No, but before we can even get there, we've got to get Democrats
elected.
Elected.
Yeah.
And not just the Congress. I mean, Congress is very important right now.
It's totally important.
But, you said you're on borough council, right? Like, like, the Republicans over the last 10 or maybe longer years have done such a better job than Democrats of electing local politicians.
Right. Yeah.
And then it creates this, farm system. Yeah, for higher office down the road. And, we sort of thought, Obama won, we got this. Mm-hmm. And
we did it.
Right. Yeah. And then look what happened.
Yeah.
But there needs to be, I think you're going to, in addition to a lot of women running, you're seeing a lot of military Democrats running. And I think, these are folks who, are both men and women who are in the military. I mean, too, Amy McGrath in Kentucky and the woman down in Texas with that great ad, knocking through doors.
Yeah.
Military, by and large, are problem solvers, right? They're there's no, here's the problem, let's fix it.
They're also an example of effective government. I mean, I think one of the most noxious things is this idea that government is always the problem. And
it's an easy scapegoat, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, we all know this, but this is one of
after lobbyists.
Yeah, right. but anyway, it seems, I would hope that at the end of Denny's race, he wins, right? And that what's left behind, what's left behind is people who feel more engaged in both party politics, but also the political process.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that the coordinated campaign for the state, the guy who's up in Union County, he's been great about this. And I think it's from the top down, like work with these grassroots groups, get them involved.
We're talking to,
right,
everybody.
Here's the last thing I want to say, which I think might help with that kind of, some of your key people in a place like this district, I just know from knowing Bloomsburg and Columbia, are going to be maybe probably to the left on some policy areas compared to the general electorate. And they can get frustrated, right? Because they're why am I working for this person if we're not going to get what I want, in quotes. Right. But one thing that I think could be really effective is, I've been surprised sometimes how much people who are very involved still don't always completely understand the whole picture. Those kinds of graphs that kind of show this is our plan, this is how our path to victory, right? It's going to be 25% Republic, whatever the numbers are. Bring that to these presentations. If you're not already, I was just thinking, bring that to those presentations, because those people need to, they may know intellectually that they need to.
But to see the actual visual.
See the visual, right? And understand, because they live in their world. I go to a coffee shop and I'm hanging out with, I don't know that many Trump voters. I'm just talking about me personally. Mm-hmm. And I know that they're out there, but that abstract knowledge doesn't always match with the personal knowledge. And the people who are very involved and are surrounded by Democratic activists, they can get a little myopic siloed about the big picture. So that might be one thing that would help. For people to really engage and be maybe this isn't my preferred candidate over on some issues.
Right.
But for him to win, to get to that point, this is the path to victory. So.
Yeah. And that's, as those conversations continue, and we're, I have the macro plan in place, but it's really the details of executing that plan that matter. And
we're coming down here, but what is, I don't know if we can ask this right now. We're already an hour into it, but I was just gonna say, what is a day in the life of Keith Emmerich on the campaign trail?
We heard about breakfast.
Yeah. Every day's different. This morning I started out in Berks County. I woke up, and then I had a meeting, and then I drove up here. Then I had lunch with someone here in Bloomsburg. I stopped by our office in Millville actually first, talked to the campaign team. They're all up here except for me.
You guys have a comms director or field director?
We have a field director, we have a finance director, and we have a campaign assistant, and we have an advisor.
Okay.
And then I'm the campaign manager. So I'm handling comms for now.
You guys have field organizers and stuff like that?
Yeah. So we're scant right now, but our field director has created quite a database of volunteers.
Wow.
Something that comes from the spectrum of Democratic folks.
Right.
So I'd love to have Denny everywhere every day, but I can't, just especially on weekends with all the fairs going on. But we have people in every county who, you know, walking around with Denny Wolf t-shirts and want to be part of this. And you know, I've explained to people, like, I'm not a silver bullet. Like, Denny himself is not a silver bullet. He's a great candidate.
Right.
And that's number one.
Right.
But, you know, I do bring a certain level of understanding.
Lots of trial and error.
Trial and error, you know, expertise. I hate using that word because I don't know. Is anyone really an expert on anything? I mean, hopefully brain surgeons are. But, like, you know, but this is really all hands on deck. Like, and, you know, this is not, like, when Denny wins, sure, it's his name, but it's like we all win. And I want everyone to be a part of this because an important part of winning is actually, you know, there are people who will be undecided, like, up until the end, but, like, when we have the momentum at the end, people want to go with the winner, right? Yeah. And they want to be a part of that. And people we've never even maybe even talked to, but they've just been paying attention. So every day is different. Right now I'm really trying to, you know, build our coalitions. My focus are on the three most populous counties in the district. We obviously have to raise money. You know,
is he getting small dollar like that?
Yeah, we are. It's starting to pick up. Our finance director started 2 weeks ago. This is his third week. He actually worked on the Rushern. His name is Ryan Belcher. He worked on the Rushern Baker campaign in Maryland, who lost the Maryland governor's race to Ben Jealous in the primary. So he came up from there. He's young, but he's a pro. He knows what he's doing.
Is he mostly just, like, calling donors, or is he?
Yeah, he's all of it. Yeah, you know, and so we've got, you know, Denny making calls, and obviously Ryan, and then I can talk to folks as well. Yeah. Our field director's name is Nathan Lund.
I've met him before.
He's a young guy. He worked on Hillary's campaign. Yeah. So he's never run field before, but, like, you know, so I was like, you know, and he and I talked about this, so I'm not airing any dirty laundry, but you know, I was like, you know, kind of feeling it out, and he's super smart. He's whip smart, and he's got this, you know, we're putting the plan together, and he and I talk about it, and he's got this great volunteer database and base, and I have the utmost confidence in him. So, you know, we're slim. Like, I've only been up 3 weeks now. So, you know, it's July, but people are on vacation. Yeah. So July and August are really getting Denny out there, raising money.
If people wanted to donate or volunteer, Denny Wolf.
Yeah, you go to Denny's website, which is Denny Wolf.
You gave me a card. DennyWolf.com.
Yeah, I thought it was DennyWolf. I didn't want to make sure it was like for Congress.
Is Governor Wolf 2 F's?
No, Governor's 1 F.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So Denny.
DennyWolf.com.
2 F's. It sounds like he's a worse student. Denny Wolf got 2 F's. Let's do real quick. We have sort of this thing that we've done a couple times, like pet peeves about, like, sort of small things in politics and governance. So, like, for me, one is, like, in Union County, there's Union Township. I'm like, come on, more creativity. That is confusing. And it's also confusing to have Union Township in Snyder County, which is next to Union County. Like, that, no. There's enough names in the world, so townships with the same names as the county.
My pet peeve, and listeners will know this already, is
landscape.
Yeah, so it's when you have those petitions to get people in office, and they're printed vertically, but they give you, like, inches to fill out
your card.
Why not just make it landscape? You know, like, the whole problem would be solved.
That's right.
They were printed in landscape, but you can't.
Vote for Wolf and Fetterman for landscape.
Yeah.
It's landscape petitions.
It's a small coalition of people.
But it's two right now. It's growing. We might have a third.
Yeah.
So do you have something like that that's kind of flat, half funny, half serious?
No, but, you know, Pennsylvania, there's so many villages and townships, and it's like, here's an example. I'm from Montgomery County, Douglas Township, so Douglas Montgomery. Literally next door is Berks County, Douglas Berks Township. So part of the same township, two different counties, feed into the same public high school, like, and it's just, you know, but
little fiefdoms.
Yeah. So there are these townships and these villages, and yeah, I think that's why Pennsylvania has more volunteer fire departments than anywhere in the country, because just everyone has
different. Yeah.
And so I guess this would be my pet peeve, because, you know, we had the firehouse breakfast. I can't get Denny to all of them because there's just so many.
What's that story about?
Do you want me to tell that?
Yeah.
There's a town, I can't really say where, but a friend of mine who sort of studies small towns in Pennsylvania is a sociologist. But they had a discussion in, like, the borough council, and then they had to pass an ordinance specifically prohibiting driving the volunteer fire truck when you're when you have an open container, right? Because there have been issues about like driving with open beers the fire truck. And what I really love about this is that it wasn't unanimous. Like, it was contentious. You know, how are we going to get them out if they can't have a beer on the fire truck? Like, is that not like a SenPen story?
Yes. Was it Schuylkill County?
It could have been any one of them.
I won't say.
I love it.
But they're, I mean, I'm glad I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't seeking this out. We had talked about that prior to, you know, recording, but it's nice to be in Pennsylvania for the summer. And I love Pennsylvania falls when the mm-hmm. leaves start to change. And
it's great.
I feel like I'm, you know, I will go back to my lobbying firm when I'm done this. Like, I have no other motivation than to get Denny across the finish line as the winner in November. But it's nice to be back in PA around nature daily, and it's nice to be in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, you know, I wouldn't have gone to a district where the Dems going to win, right? Yeah. Like,
I know we're sort of wrapping up, but I just like the sort of upswing in interest and motivation. Like, are you seeing that in ways compared to other campaigns that you've worked on?
Yeah, I mean, sort of like 2002 when Tim beat George Gekas. I mean, we had it was a major upset. Mm-hmm. And there was we had a lot of volunteer support, and there was a lot of energy, and like you could feel.
That's
the energy.
Interesting because that went against the national trend, though.
Went against the national trend.
Yeah.
So this one, right? Hopefully, the wind is at our backs
because
we're going to need it with everything else. But no, you know, I wasn't fully sure what I was going to get when I got up here, and you know, and maybe it's just again who I'm coming in contact with, but I feel like I'm establishing having my feelers out and who has their ear to the ground and whatnot. Yeah. And, you know, at least from like an energized perspective, it's like, it's the Democrats. And I just don't see in this district, like, I don't see people like really rallying around Dan Muser. I mean, he's obviously gonna have the hardcore Republican support, but I think that we're gonna have such a volunteer.
And is he running from the Trump playbook? I haven't.
His slogan is pro-gun, pro-life, pro-Trump. And that's the other thing, too, and, remove the first two, but it's like, you know, one of the beauties of working for Tim, and I had friends like, oh, you don't work for a real Democrat. And it's like, you know, we had to weigh our decisions, you know, and then Tim had to go vote and then own those votes, good or bad.
Yeah.
You know, Denny, when you run on President Trump won this district with 68%, so that obviously a lot of folks in this district voted for him, but like, when your slogan is pro-Trump, are you going to – like, you're not going to listen to anybody. You know, you've already said that one person's agenda is the best, you know, and it's like, well, what if, you know, somebody down in Leesport in Berks County, you know, has a concern that – voted for Trump but has a concern, like a farmer with these tariffs, you know, like, but no, you're just going to blindly follow his agenda? Well, then you're not listening to my concerns.
How about Denny could – I'm sure you have a slogan, but like
– Yeah, what is Denny's slogan?
Send a farmer to Congress.
Well, that's good.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's good. That. But also, your away jersey, you know, like your other one could be like, pro jobs, pro family, pro America, and the last one I'm trying to get at, like,
it's
country before party,
American working families.
Yeah. But I think most Democrats are doing a good job not to talk about Trump too much or Russia directly. But I feel like especially the last week, some people really do realize that, like, not just him, but like, I feel like a lot of their party is about self-interest over like our collective destiny, you know.
Yeah,
that one's free.
It's been a real joy.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
No, this has been.
And people can check out Denny Wolf at dennywolf.com.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show, like the show notes that go on.
Keith, is there any way that people can follow your career and
what you're up to? Are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter. It's @KeithJPemrick.
Okay. PEMRICK.
Yeah, trying to build up those followers. I think I'm over 500 now.
Oh, that's great. I'll add you today.
Yeah. I'm on Facebook. But I know there's a way to follow my career. I tweet about, I do more retweeting, but it has to do with either politics or sports generally.
What sports?
All of them?
All of them,
yeah, by and large. Cool.
And people can follow our podcast, how you've already been doing it, since you're listening to it right now. But tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends.
I'll post this on Facebook, so that'll reach over 1,000 people.
Nice.
Great. Well, I don't know.
All right.
Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Town, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Road, Swissvale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela. Oh, well, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Oh, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley's fair, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.